Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We obviously ran out of time yesterday because there's a lot to cover, and I want to get into the details. And more importantly, I always want to make sure I can give you the appropriate or at least a good generic definition. So I know I took a little time and just quickly looking up suffrage, but I think that those types of things are important. Anyway, as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the tangible solutions for what we need to do to get the federal government out of our lives and allow into compliance with the Constitution and allowing the states to actually start reaping the benefits of their resources as well as the people of the states to be able to do things, because we're living under federal tyranny, whether you like it or not. There's a lot of people that kind of like that concept, but I'm here to tell you that when you look at what we're dealing with and what we are having to put up with, I'm just here to tell you that the federal government doesn't have any business doing anything that is outside those enumerated powers. And these aren't just my words. These are Madison's words, as well as Nicholas, as well as a lot of other people. Anything outside the scope of the Constitution, they are hard tied, or they have to live within those enumerated powers, period. And so let me kind of lay out what we want to do. So what we want to do is we want to get through this recension of the 17th Amendment. We're talking about republicanism and the whole principles behind American republicanism. It is not good enough that we, the people, have, because if we maintain the course we're going, and we maintain the we, the people, we all have a vote, and we all have a say in everything, then we will be torn apart. There's a method to the madness, and the framers recognizing and placing checks and balances within our government. Let me ask you this. There's all sorts of corporations out there, and they have boards of directors, and they have stockholders, and they have organizational meetings. And anybody that is a stockholder are those who are the ones that get to vote on the organizational meetings. And based on how much stock you have, gives you more weight on your vote. Well, we have a system similar. We have other entities besides just people. We have institutions that actually hold stock in our politics or in our civics, and those institutions would be the sub-elements of government. The states are a sub-element, the counties are sub-elements of the state, so forth and so on. And so we delegate some powers to the federal government, we delegate more powers to the state, and then we delegate a little bit more powers to our county. Now, the state doesn't decide whether you can have a stop sign or, you know, how they want to regulate your traffic. The county usually does that, unless you have a draconian state that has marginalized and taken away all the powers of the county. And if that's the case, you need to get your counties to get their power back. But the point of this whole concept is that with these different layers of governance and civics, we have a check on our other governments. These, especially within the U.S. Constitution, the states have a check just as well as the people have a check against the federal government. Why is this important? Because each state gets one vote. So what that means is Wyoming, which barely has 500,000 people, their vote is equal to the state of California, which has what, 70, 60, I don't know how many millions of people are in California, but it's up there. And when most people think about it, well, that's not fair. Absolutely is fair, because when you're talking about equal in the constituency, a state is a state. It doesn't matter how many people live in that state. And it's the same thing with counties. If you have a county that has a, you know, very sparse population, well, you have an equal vote. You should have an equal vote in your state senate as all the other counties. But they didn't do that. They've actually polluted the water, and they've got everybody to think, well, it's all about apportionment to the people, because we're a democracy, because it's all about the people. People are the power. That concept is a misnomer. People are the ultimate sovereigns within America and our government, but they are not the only sovereigns. This whole concept of American republicanism distributed sovereignty to different levels for different purposes. And that was the whole brilliance of the divine hand of providence in inspiring Sherman, actually, Roger Sherman, to come forward with the American form of republicanism, to extend sovereignty towards the logical sovereigns. What they were doing was they were creating a new entity, and they knew that they didn't want to give all sovereignty to this new entity. So a lot of the sovereignty had to be retained. And so that's why the states were able to keep their sovereignty. And it's the same thing with the counties and so forth. The counties were supposed to, they're supposed to have a level of sovereignty and delegate the rest of that to the states. Or I should say, a very limited, you know, function and role to the states. And so this is time, it's about time, folks, we start actually auditing the processes. We start actually, and that's the whole point of Republic Review, is to get it all put down onto the table. Put it down here and let's read. Let's figure out what you're supposed to be doing. Let's figure out what you guys assumed and usurped. And let's figure out whether we want you to continue doing those things. And this is more importantly, as I've talked to many people regarding the process of Republic Review, and people, I've actually had people come up to me in Wyoming and other states go, we want to, I think Bob Schultz is trying to kick off Republic Review in New York. Well, that's great. But here's the question I have for Bob and everybody else, and they get it, and they completely go, you're absolutely right. Our focus is the federal government first. What happens if the state of New York or the state of Wyoming or the state of Idaho, what happens if that state fails? Well, it may go into conservatorship, but what happens? Does their currency change? Does the world go on, you know, on a tilt or something? Is their world all over as they know it? No. But let me ask you this. What happens when the federal government defaults? What happens when the federal government fails? Well, that means that every state that's tied to that will go down with it. So when you understand the magnitude and the priority here, we have to audit the federal government first. We can fix the states later, because our federal government is dragging us down into an abyss by doing all sorts of things it's not supposed to be doing. It's just like, it's tantamount to identity theft. Somebody comes in and with the, you know, has successfully assumed your identity and has gone into all of your accounts and starts writing checks and putting loans in your name and everything else, and starts walking away with the money. They've just dragged you down successfully. And they used fraud to do that. That's the exact same case here. Our politicians over the past 200 years have defrauded the American people by usurping roles, responsibilities, and powers that they've never been given or granted via the Constitution. They've declared martial law, and in the process of declaring martial law, they absolutely violated the Constitution in the context of how to declare martial law. The only way they can declare martial law is in the states where the militia is deployed in service. not necessarily all the states, but any state that has a militia deployed. And if you've listened to the show, you understand these things. I'm just kind of regurgitating some of the stuff that we have covered. So that's why you are listening to the only show that really puts all of this on the table. And we walk through this, we kind of hold your hands. And every once in a while, we go back and forth and we teach you about, you know, all of these principles that you need to understand. And they're not, again, this is not rocket science. If you listen, if you just listen to this show for a course of a couple of months, you know, let's say a few months, a couple of months, whatever, because I try to go through this stuff on a regular basis. And then I also try to go through the, help me out here, I try to go through the marketing so that you can see all of the things that they're doing that they're not supposed to do and say, hey, folks, what's it going to take? What is it going to take for you to take action to get the federal government back into compliance? Because it's actually pretty easy. All you've got to do is do something. And we don't need 100%. We don't even need the numbers that Antifa and the rest of the, you know, the SEIU and all the unions getting people out to protest. All we need to do is start educating people and letting people understand and getting one state to stand up. Once Wyoming stands up, it's a new ball game altogether. Why? Because now all of a sudden it's not just you and me. It is a state calling upon the other states to do their job and awakening the people in those states. It becomes this snowball effect, and it is a very powerful thing. We're at a hard break. I don't want to run out of time like I did yesterday, so we'll be right back after these two messages. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so we could cover a lot of different things about, and that's what I call marketing, whether it be Trump trying to buy Greenland, whether it be, you know, the FBI trying to claim that red flag laws, they're able to save lives. Do not trust the deep state. As a matter of fact, do not allow them to continue to violate your civil rights as well as your constitution. There's all sorts of things that we could be covering, but I want to get through these basic fundamental principles and help you kind of understand what an abomination we are looking at when we are looking at the states no longer having their check within Congress on what those senators are supposed to be doing. As I pointed out yesterday in our previous episode, because you may be listening to this on a different time span. However, as I pointed out in a previous episode, if you look at the Constitution, the states are supposed to be representing the state's interest, the state legislator's interest. The powers that they're executing are particularly designed to, you know, have a greater effect on the states than it is on the people. The things that they're supposed to be doing in the Senate is supposed to be supporting their constituents, the state legislatures. But the if you understand the appointment process of the senators was moved away from the state legislatures to the people as an open democracy. So one would think, well, their constituency has changed. But no, it hasn't, because when you read the rest of the Constitution and that amendment did not change who they're supposed to be responsible to. Ah, but he who pays the piper calls the tune. And if you understand the sanctity of the Senate in representing the states and the state legislatures, you have to understand that there was no money in that position. In other words, it wasn't a bunch of people coming up and, you know, running a bunch of ads, and they weren't throwing. I mean, you want to take a lot of money out of the political process and move it back down to the states and make the states really the hotbed for, you know, the future of America as it should be, then we have to rescind the 17th Amendment. So that's why we are going through this whole concept of rescinding the 17th Amendment. So you'll need to listen to the previous episode, because I already started this article and I'm kind of partway through this. I'm on page one. But anyway, I'm on page two. So we get into the conflict. And so let me just continue on and go on with this article so you can kind of understand what I'm trying to articulate, what I'm stating there. The Amendment Protection Clause in Article 5 clearly states, quote, that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage, right to vote in the Senate. And so what this means is that the state's vote, not the people's vote, cannot be taken away without the state's consent. In other words, the state legislatures have to concede in surrendering that. Even if the amendment passes, they cannot be held to it if they have not provided consent. In other words, this one line protects and guarantees the states to be able to constrain, such as the state of Utah. Utah rejected the 17th Amendment. It's based on that and based on Article 5, what I just read to you, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So what that means is Utah has the power and ability to actually maintain their appointment process of their senators. They cannot be deprived of that. Had the 17th Amendment changed this part of Article 5 as well, then it would be a whole different ballgame. But that's what happens when you have idiots thinking that they're doing something good, or I should say they knew what they were doing. They were doing something evil, and they didn't understand the Constitution. They didn't understand Article 5. 9 times out of 10, most people don't even know this exists in Article 5. People read right past it. Oh, well, that's the amendment process. We don't have to worry about that. Well, why is this clause in the amendment process? Because it's an amendment protection clause. In other words, if an amendment comes along that is going to take away the suffrage of the state, no state will lose its equal suffrage in the Senate unless it consents to that. Period. It's that simple. This clause guarantees that the state, in other words, the state legislatures, or legislators, which is the constituent to the senators, must consent to losing their right to vote. During the Constitutional Convention, the smaller states demanded this clause because they did not trust the bigger states, and they felt that over time, the more populated states would try to change representation in the Senate to an apportionment to population instead of an equal standing. More importantly, state sovereigns would have to consent to lose its suffrage altogether. If a state has been duped or coerced into believing it has to go along with this whole shenanigans, even if it was unwittingly done, does not mean that they are obligated to go along. If at any point in time a party of a contract recognizes for whatever reason that they are not obligated to go along with this change, then they can withdraw and, in this case, return to appointing senators. There are no statutes of limitations within this amendment or the Constitution if a party is in error or recognizes that they cannot be obligated, then they are in error and not obligated. So in researching congressional debate in both houses regarding the 17th Amendment, there was no mention of the Article 5 Protection Clause. In other words, when the Senate and Congress, or I should say both houses of Congress, argued the 17th Amendment. Why? Why did they argue it? Because they had to pass it. Just to be very clear, the Senate has to pass, as well as the House of Representatives, with two-thirds majority vote for a Congress to go, or for, I should say, by Congress, both houses by two-thirds majority have to pass the amendment before they can even forward that amendment out to the states. So they had to debate this, and that's why understanding the debates of every single amendment helps you understand what the real intent, not what SCOTUS says, but what they actually said, because those are the definitions. You got to remember, when it comes down to a contractual change, and people are debating it, and somebody says, well, this is what this means, that clarification, that point of fact, is legally binding. And so what they were saying in Congress, in both the Senate and the House, in talking about this amendment, is legally binding. And you will find that no one mentioned anything about Article 5. Why is that? Why is that the entire Congress didn't even make a peep about this Amendment Protection Clause? Pretty simple, my friends. They didn't understand. They didn't know. And so they actually walked forward into the buzzsaw by creating this conflict. And what it's doing is we're now in a position where I don't want to say America is going to be thrown into chaos, but there's some people that are going to be upset when all of a sudden states withdraw their acquiescing to this amendment when they realize that this amendment is violating the Constitution. They cannot be forced into compliance. That the states have this protection in Article 5, and they can and should retain their applications, or I should say they retain their appointment processes by the state legislatures of seating their senators. Now, what would happen if the Senate actually stopped seating those state senators because they have to accept them, but if they choose not to because they want to play politics, then this might actually go to the Supreme Court. But there is no doubt in my mind the Supreme Court would have to withhold the 17th Amendment from states that reject it, because clearly this is in the Article 5 when it talks about amendments. States are protected from anything that takes away their suffrage. Like I said, this was something that was demanded as a level of protection from the smaller states. And I'm going to get into a small state where there's a little bit of irony behind all of this, but we'll get into that. The Article 5 Amendment Protection Clause still stands to protect the states from losing its suffrage if they have not given formal consent. The fact remains that there is no evidence that anyone knew or even discussed the Article 5 Protection Clause or even understood this. Therefore, Congress created a constitutional conflict by passing and forwarding the 17th Amendment to the states for ratification by not including a change or removal of the Amendment Protection Clause in Article 5. So, consequently, the following states have not given consent to the relinquishing its suffrage to the Senate and can return to appointing their senators. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you what those states are. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Now, you know, I could easily be talking about some really good news, like the new future of the Tomahawk missile testing that's going on right now because we walked away from that Russian nuclear treaty that Russia has not been, they've been violating that for so long. And, you know, we're finally no longer going to be the only ones recognizing treaties anymore. We're going to actually start walking away from them, and we need to walk away from the UN as well. But as I told you going into the break, I want to get into the seven states that can actually stop allowing general elections for their senators and let the state legislatures start appointing them again. Now, with that, there's all sorts of things I could be talking about and be basically saying, so what's it going to take? I mean, it's great to see Trump do this, but if we do not take a stand, then some of the things that might be nice that Trump may do and some of the things that are going on that shouldn't be happening, the only way we're going to secure our liberty is for the states to step up and secure the Constitution once again. And rescinding the 17th Amendment is a good step forward in securing our liberty. Now, the seven states are Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia, and Utah. Now, the first six, they just never ratified. They didn't reject or ratify. They just didn't do it. They've not given their consent. Utah has absolutely and objectively rejected this amendment altogether. And so I would just want you to understand that all seven of these states are in the category of being able to maintain their process and not following the 17th Amendment. Because again, the 17th Amendment did not make a change or remove this clause out of Article 5 in the Constitution. So as I was saying, there is no clause or language within the 17th Amendment that addresses the Amendment Protection Clause or the protection of the state's suffrage within the Senate. Furthermore, the preamble of the 17th Amendment clearly limits the effect of this amendment to only identifying Article 1, Section 3, and changing the process for those states who consent to surrendering their suffrage to the people directly. The 17th Amendment and the Article 5 Amendment Protection Clause are in direct conflict because the amendment did not sufficiently address each part of the Constitution. There is an argument that the amendment is invalid, one, because the conflict that it creates, again, the aforementioned states must point to this Amendment Protection Clause in Article 5 and abandon their general election process in selecting senators and return to appointing senators once again. I assert that as the facts bear this out, I believe this conflict created a blessing from the divine hand of providence. And I will go into that as we move forward into this, because again, I was kind of hinting on the fact that there was a little state out there that demanded this protection. And this happens to be the exact same state that actually said this during the Constitutional Convention. Because when Madison's plan was put onto the table, and the New Jersey's plan was put onto the table, and they said, hey, you know, we have to move forward with apportionment, and we want to do apportionment by the people. And they said, what is your problem? Why do you not, you know, want to accept this concept, this paradigm of apportionment by the people? And the state of Delaware, the delegates for the state of Delaware, stepped up and said, we don't trust you big states, and we will not sign up where you can marginalize us and step right over us. So rescinding, not repealing, is the concept here. As good as the blessing was that the constitutionally illiterate people wrote the 17th Amendment, the Lord gave us even a greater blessing in 2010. In an effort to prove that the state of Delaware was a progressive state who originally rejected the 17th Amendment on March 18, 1913, Delaware rescinded their rejection and formally voted to ratify the 17th Amendment and submitted their ratification to Congress on the 1st of July, 2010, so that they would no longer be on the record for being one of the two states rejecting this progressive era amendment. Do you get it? Do you understand what they just did? What they just did was they changed their position, a formal position regarding the 17th Amendment. And how they did it almost a century later, 97 years later, the state of Delaware said, no, we're retracting our rejection of this amendment and we're providing full ratification by our state legislators. So how is Delaware ratifying the 17th Amendment a blessing? In a nation of laws, the door must swing both ways. In other words, if one state is allowed to change their position on this amendment, then any and all states who ratified or rejected this amendment can now change their position. Who was in the presidency in 2010? Obama, the progressive, a new progressive era president. And who was his sidekick? That's right, Plugs Biden. And so, and Plugs, I think that's a Levin, Mark Levin type of term of endearment. Gaff Biden, if you want to call him that. But anyway, the whole point here is that Congress and everybody wanted to help Delaware and help, you know, Biden look like a good progressive guy. And they opened up the door for change. And like I said, that door has to swing both ways. Uniformity in application is a fundamental principle in the Constitution. Had Delaware not done this, or had Congress not accepted the formal change in position and said, nope, sorry, you can't do that. You will always remain on the records as a state that rejected the 17th Amendment. And in doing that, then this would not be a possibility to rescind the 17th Amendment. This is a historic opportunity, my friends. I believe those in Delaware who did this were just as ignorant of the Constitution as those who drafted and pushed the 17th Amendment in the first place in trying to ram down our throats the progressive agenda. So what does this mean? What does it mean that if any of the following states can if any of these following states can formally rescind the ratification of the 17th Amendment and formally reject it and forward their change to Congress, Massachusetts, Arizona, Minnesota, New York, Kansas, and Oregon, well, those pretty much, those are kind of bluish and green and so forth. However, Kansas does stand out as a red state. That's one state that could do it. What about North Carolina? Now, these are the orders of all of the states above, but these are the states that are likely, and as a matter of fact, I have a color code for this, and if you look, Kansas, North Carolina, potentially Michigan, Iowa definitely, Montana almost certainly, Idaho definitely, Nevada, it's blue now, so no, but Texas absolutely, Wyoming absolutely, Arkansas, absolutely. Maine, it's a little more progressive, and same thing with Illinois. But North Dakota, Wisconsin, Indiana, we only need so many states. And we have, if you look at how many red states there are and how many of these states recognize the damage and the danger of the 17th Amendment, the underlying states, which you can't see, but I kind of highlighted some of these for you. The underlying states above are those likely to rescind their ratification once they are aware that the door has been opened by Delaware and now available to all. Okay? If you understand that, Delaware set precedence. So now every state can do the exact same thing. And oh, by the way, it took Delaware 97 years to do this, and there's no clause, there's no legalese that says, okay, states, you have 97 years ticking. No, at any point in time now, on this one particular, and it's only this one amendment. It's not all amendments. It's only this one amendment. So at the time of ratification, this amendment required 36 states to ratify because Hawaii and Alaska were not states yet. Therefore, with the aforementioned seven states, we would only need six states to rescind the ratification and then formally reject the amendment altogether. But bottom line, if we do seven and six, how many is that? That's 13 states. That even withholds and withstands the 50-state requirement, if you understand what I'm just saying. So in other words, all we need is six of these states. Wyoming is a slam dunk. Right? North Dakota and South Dakota, those should be slam dunks. Kansas, Arkansas, we've almost got six right there. Oklahoma, bam, it's done. Because Oklahoma, Texas, there's been several states that have come out and said that they want to repeal the 17th Amendment. They don't have to. They can formally rescind it. So with that, We're at a hard break, so when we come back, we're going to wrap this up with a conclusion, and then we're going to talk about the relevance of this with the Constitution and how this also applies to the state. So we'll be right back after this.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so we're kind of wrapping up the last segment here, and believe me, the conclusion is kind of short. Delaware and the federal government made the mistake in opening the door to changing one's position for this one particular amendment. Not all of them, just this one. Because they allowed one state to change this one. They didn't say that we're changing everything, you can rescind and so forth. If they started allowing that, then it would be really bad for them to do that. But they did do this because they wanted to placate, to appease the progressives in office, to make them seem like, oh, we're not a progressive state. We recognize the importance of democracy, and we want to smash out republicanism. They played their cards to their demise. And we have the opportunity, my friends, to ram it down their throat. So why is it that you aren't going to take the time to get this? And if you want this, I'll be hopefully getting this posted. But send me an email if you want this article so that you can forward this article out to your state representatives, especially if you live in a real red state. If you know somebody that is an advocate for rescinding the 17th, or actually repealing the 17th Amendment, you can actually be the smart one and say, well, why would you want to repeal it when you can just rescind it? And start educating people on the fact that we can rescind the 17th Amendment. Again, Delaware and the federal government made the mistake in opening the door to changing this one position for this one amendment. With regard to the nature of this matter, this is a political matter, and the legislative branch has jurisdiction over this, not the judicial branch. So if this went to SCOTUS, this would be forced back to Congress. Well, with the Democrats in control, then they actually will probably shut this down. But guess what? We had the opportunity when the Republicans are in control. And the smart cards would be if 2020, we can get control of Congress completely once again. This needs to be the strategy of moving forward and getting six other states to reject and getting these seven states to stop having general elections for their senators. If you understand exactly what I'm saying, then you should completely understand that we could actually do this in 2020 and rescind the, actually 2021, because that's when everybody would take office, and we would be able to rescind the 17th Amendment. Consequently, taking action on this would be best suited when Congress is under control of the Republican Party, just like I just said. This is only one minor fix to restoring our hybrid constitutional republic, but it is a guaranteed fix. It drains the swamp, half of the swamp, at least the Senate side of the swamp, by making these senators once again accountable to the state legislatures and having the state legislatures replacing them with people that will do their bidding. You understand? Instead of doing the globalist bidding and instead of, you know, surrendering sovereignty and buying off on these crappy agreements, instead of demanding, no, we're the Senate and we must go through the ratifying process of a treaty by 2/3 majority, period. And it would change. We would no longer have these, you know, I don't know how many millions or billions of dollars of, you know, cash going to Iran through an agreement instead of a treaty. That wouldn't have happened if we would have the Senate under the control of the state legislators. So what has all this got to do with this? This whole concept of republicanism will create, I believe, and people understanding this whole concept of the sub-elements of government having sovereigns and representation, because people are going to start learning American republicanism. Well, why is this? Because our states are sovereigns. We have delegated to them more responsibilities than to the federal government. And we need them to have representation to ensure that their toes don't get stepped on or they don't get crap jammed down their throat. They don't have to accept the EPA. They don't have to accept any of these things. And so if you understand what I'm saying, this actually also plays out with the Article 4, Section 4 of the 4th Article. And what I'm trying to say is that when the Constitution guarantees every state as a Republican-informed state, what that means is that the states are supposed to be set up with the concepts of American republicanism. Or what we have to do is, actually, let me back up. Why is it that the states, all of the states except for one, have bicameral legislative bodies? Because the counties are sovereigns. They may not have the sovereignty at this point because the states have either stolen their sovereignty or has obfuscated it. But by the Constitution of the United States and by the principles of American republicanism, sovereigns are to have representation in our government. The political sovereigns, which are the people and the sub-elements of government, then they are supposed to have suffrage in the legislative bodies. They're supposed to be able to vote for and be a constituent to those people at the different levels of government. And the states are to be Republican in form as well. So what that means, just to be very, very clear, what that means is the counties are the ones that are supposed to be electing or selecting who is to represent them in the Senate. And what that also does is it gives every county equal suffrage in the state Senate instead of the people. If you look at the format of our bicameral legislative bodies, it's all done by the people apportionment, which means it's done based on the form of democracy, not the American Republican form of government. It's not about you know, giving the people equal voice. It's about protecting the minorities and protecting the interest of the sub-elements of government as well as those people in the disparate counties. And as I have said before, when you start looking at a coastal county versus a mountain county versus a agricultural county versus a desert county and so forth, you can see how the coastal counties have a higher population and they will always control the body of politics in the state unless you have some checks and balances. And the whole concept of our constitutional design is based upon suffrage for all, equal suffrage for those of the sub-elements of government, and apportionment by the people, guaranteeing that the counties are also supposed to represent their people as well. So in other words, if you live in a county that has, you know, the least amount of people in the entire county, they're supposed to at least be able to elect one representative in the House of Representatives, just like the state. So yesterday, I was running a little bit long, but I'm asking you, show me one state that has surrendered its suffrage in both houses, because the people are still represented in the state of Wyoming, in the state of Montana, South Dakota. Every state has at least one representative. Why? Because Congress guarantees, or isn't it Congress? The Constitution guarantees that every state will have a minimum of at least one. Now, here's the whole point. If you understand what the Constitution says, the Constitution says that there 30,000 people are to have one representative. If you have more than 30,000 people, then you have two representatives, and it's to be broken down or divisible by 30,000. And so if you look at Montana, if you look at Wyoming, you'll probably find that they are well under, if especially in context to the 30,000, right? In context to the 30,000, you would find that there is a an under support or an under representation, because I believe Montana would have 33 representatives if every 30,000 people had their representation, and Wyoming would have 19. If you understand what I'm telling you, yeah, this would be the other side of draining Congress. Now, to be clear, when we start actually getting the appropriate representation for the people and the representation for the states, we are going to displace and drain the entire swamp. Congress can no longer be bought by the globalists, and that would be the best thing in the world. And I can't understand why even some of the Democrats would say, oh, no, we want the globalists in charge. I don't believe that the blue-collar Democrat, the guy that, you know, loves, he bleeds red, white, and blue, he's out there as a tradesman, whether he's a carpenter, plumber, or what have you, but he votes Democrat because the party, the Labor Party, supports his union, or vice versa, the union supports that. So they're kind of in the tank for the Democrats. But most of these people don't like that. Most of the people want their own representation. Most of the people don't want to have to share their representation with the 750,000 people. You've got to understand that when people start really understanding the checks and balances that were baked into our system, the divine hand of providence truly did inspire our framers. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Claiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.